supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. You know all those plastic bags you use to cart your groceries home from the supermarket? New Jersey lawmakers are considering banning them completely at retail stores in addition to grocery stores. What do Garden State voters think of the idea? WHYY's Aaron Moselle reports.
The Wegmans parking lot in Cherry Hill is packed on this broiling hot Labor Day. Maureen Fitzgerald stopped in to get ingredients for the cupcake she's bringing to a baby shower. Like a lot of Wegmans shoppers, she often brings her own reusable grocery bags. She says banning plastic bags, which a lot of people just throw away, is the right thing to do.
You know, I mean, our world is polluted and it's scary for our children and grandchildren. And, you know, got to pay the piper at some point. Our landfills are filled with plastic diapers and plastic bottles. And at some point, we have to stop. This is one small thing.
Standing outside the Save-A-Lot in Pennsauken, just outside Camden, Paula Jones agrees. She's tired of seeing animals on TV struggling for their lives because of a plastic bag that made its way into the water.
And I'm like on edge when I'm watching somebody rescue them and hoping that they save them in time.
Fellow Save-A-Lot shopper Duran Farmer understands, but says like cars, plastic bags are a necessary evil, even if they're not great for the environment.
Since I've been a child, you've always got your bags from the grocery store. You know what I mean? And I don't see why that would change. It's not broke. Don't fix it.
And Farmer has another bone to pick.
In the city of Camden, we don't have a full running grocery store. We don't have a ShopRite. We don't have an Acme. They took the Pathmark away. Now you want to take the bags away. It's crazy. It's hard enough to come out and get the food as is. Now you want to make it harder for us to get the food out the store.
Late last month, New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy vetoed a bill that would have charged customers 5 cents for each paper or plastic bag they used. The reason? It didn't go far enough. A tougher bill banning single-use plastic bags has already been introduced. Aaron Moselle, WHYY News.
Hundreds of unionized workers marched in a show of solidarity today in Philadelphia's Labor Day parade. WHYY's Tom McDonald reports that a recent Supreme Court ruling and changing economy are boosting some unions, while others are dealing with a new reality.
This past year, a major shift came for workers at Philadelphia International Airport, as the Service Employees International Union was able to organize everyone from those who push wheelchairs to those who work for a contractor cleaning airplanes. Gabriel Morgan is vice president of SEIU Local 32BJ, who was a major force in the organization drive.
We're really doing two things, which are, you know, sound pretty straightforward. We are talking to workers in low-wage industries with our large-scale employers, so talking to folks who are working in airports and parking industry, security officers. You know, the biggest employers in the United States now are predominantly low-wage service sector employers. And so we're talking to, you know, folks who work for those big companies. And then once we decide that we're going to dig in and organize an industry based on there being enough worker support, then, you know, we bend all of the organizational resources and all of our attention to getting that done however long it takes.
Aaron Linder works at the airport as a wheelchair agent, but she doesn't work for the airlines directly. She works for Prime Flight, which contracts with the airlines. Since joining the union, she says her pay has increased. But more importantly, she says she and her coworkers are feeling more respect.
The communication was like way off, and the respect level of our rights as workers was way off as well. So, but since we got the union, everything, all the improvement that we had since we fought for the union has progressed and is still progressing each and every day.
SEIU may be adding members and expanding into new areas, but unions representing public employees are dealing with a very different environment. A Supreme Court ruling this year ended the practice of fair share payments, which were dues paid to unions for their negotiating deals for non-union workers. Workers covered by union contracts had to pay the fees even if they chose not to join the union. Fred Wright, director of District Council 47 of AFSCME, which represents white-collar city workers in Philadelphia, says the ruling affects quite a few people in his approximately 6,000-member union.
A loss of approximately 200 agency fee payers who was identified as not wanting to belong to the union. But on the upside of this is we had a number of people contacting us stating that they wanted to sign up and join the union. So I think it's not a bad case scenario, a worst case scenario. I think if an opportunity for us to organize people and for people to understand what the union stands for.
Wright says even though the people who don't want to be union members don't have to pay, the union still has to defend them when they're accused of wrongdoing.
The union is the exclusive representative of the contract, and we have an obligation to represent everybody who's covered under the collective bargaining agreement. So, yes, we do have to represent everybody, whether they're a member or not a member.
Art Hochner is a professor emeritus of labor studies at Temple University. He led the faculty union at Temple and is still at age 70 going to work every day at the union's office as he organizes their archives with the intentions of penning a book. He says if public sector unions want to grow, they need to go back to their roots, making their pitch directly to workers.
You can't get something from nothing. And so you've got to influence the members to unite and work together to achieve aims that will benefit the majority of people.
Hochner says while in Pennsylvania, the electricians union is the single largest political contributor, small unions will see their voices shrink.
To me, what the biggest threat is, and if unions don't have money to put into politics or do the lobbying and make the effort to influence policy, then the big money interests are going to be the ones who do.
He says a union is a way for low-wage workers to have a joint voice to influence how they're treated by the people who do have money and power. In 2017, union membership nationwide held steady, but is only about 11% of the workforce. In its heyday, unions represented one-third of American workers. Tom McDonald, WHYY News.
The unofficial end of summer is mitigated for many sports enthusiasts eagerly awaiting the advent of football, hockey, and basketball seasons. Let's play ball once again with Philadelphia Inquirer and Daily News sports columnist Marcus Hayes. Marcus, welcome back to NewsWorks Tonight.
Thanks for having me, Dave.
We'll look ahead, but hey, it's September and the Phillies are still in the hunt.
Yeah, it's been a while since that's been a sentence that could be uttered and with any real truth. And it's exciting for me. The fans aren't going to the ballpark in Philadelphia, but the team is an interesting team with an interesting manager and an interesting philosophy.
And Cy Young pitcher.
That's right. Aaron Nola is going to pitch as many times as he can because, as Gabe Kapler says, he's awesome. He really is.
But we digress. This is, of course, first a pro football town, and hey, the Eagles will be getting underway in just a few days.
The intrigue with the Eagles isn't really are they going to be good, but when are they going to be good? But they're probably the best team in football, period, and they're probably the best team in the NFC, period. But it could be a trying September for Eagles fans who are eager for their team, which is superior to their team that won the Super Bowl. It'll be trying for them to get through September if the team plays the way that it might very well play. October and November should be a little bit more pleasurable for Eagles fans.
So now on to the NBA.
They have their cornerstones now. They have a personality. They have a track to follow. Ben Simmons, for example, spent the summer with his brother Liam, who's a former assistant coach at UC Riverside, working on his jump shot. So if he comes back with a jump shot, that's a game changer. Both Markelle Fultz and Joel Embiid spent time at the same place working on their games, and there are these shadow implications on all over the internet that Markelle Fultz now has a jump shot or has regained a jump shot and maybe has a better jump shot. That's a pretty good trio.
If the trio is as you describe it, who needs Redick or Covington or the rest?
Well, you certainly need shooters, and that's the key to the NBA, and that's the key to this team. The thing I like to do in my job is see individual players progress. Watch Carson Wentz's mechanics right now are better than they ever have been, and he's had a bad knee for 9 months. I love watching what Dario Saric has done. I talked to the coach that coaches him individually in the post, and if you remember the last couple of playoff games, Dario Saric was a force in the post, But that was the product of about a year and a half of work. At the end of his rookie year, you know, two seasons ago, and throughout this year, Dario, having developed a three-pointer, he went down on the blocks and became a more viable option in the post. That's what I like to watch.
What's realistic for the Flyers this time around?
You know, they should be back in the playoffs. It depends on their goalie situation. They have about four options at goalie. But the thing that excites me about the Flyers are Ivan Provorov, who played the last playoff game with a dislocated shoulder. And it cost him, but it made him something of a legend. For a defenseman to give that sort of effort in that moment is heroic. And he was, at the end of the year, kind of the leader of the team. That's great news for the Flyers. And this is a kind of a make-or-break year for the coach, Dave Haxtell. They have to progress. They have to be somewhere like fifth or sixth seed and really contend to win a playoff series, or they're going to have to move on from Dave Haxtell.
Put it all together, is this a great year to be a Philadelphia pro sports fan?
You know, it's a great year to be a Philadelphia sports writer. You've got a Super Bowl contending team with a lot of storylines. You've got a basketball team with two of the most charismatic young players and best young players in the league, and people are watching Philadelphia. People outside are excited about Philadelphia. So you're going to get a lot of national games. You're going to get a lot of attention.
Marcus, once upon a time, Labor Day was also the kickoff to the political campaign season. Sports are often a respite. Do you suspect less so these days? Has politics blended into sports, especially in the context of this administration?
Well, this administration tends to point at whatever will distract the constituency from more important things. For example, President Trump didn't need to criticize the owners who instituted in May a draconian anthem policy, which I consider to be illegal because it changed the workplace of a union workforce. But he did, and it excited his base. So it's almost as though people like me need to avoid that distraction, see if there's any real merit to it, because it's becoming less and less meritorious. And certainly when the Cleveland Cavaliers wear Trayvon Martin hooded sweatshirts, it certainly is our responsibility to explain to the fan why they did that and why those players think that's important, when many of the Eagles and all of the Golden State Warriors declined to go to the White House because of the person sitting in the White House. That's news, you know, and I'm a columnist, so my job is to sort of say, I think this is right or wrong or good or bad because. But I will say this, I got fatigued dealing with it about a year and a half into it, and I think a lot of the readers and a lot of the listeners get fatigued dealing with it as well, because there really hasn't been a lot of movement since the Players Coalition was formed and negotiated or compelled the NFL to commit almost $90 million over 5 years to causes that will further the ends of the players who are protesting during the national anthem. The dumbest thing the NFL could have done was to readdress the issue, but the NFL does dumb things all the time. It's almost the DNA of the NFL. So, yeah, I mean, becoming a political reporter, you know, at this stage in my career isn't the career arc I would have chosen. But it does, you know, it does make for interesting debate, and it does engage you, and it does, occupy time during our preview section on WHYY, because it's part of the fabric of it now.
Marcus, thanks so much for joining us on this Labor Day Newsworks tonight.
My pleasure, Dave.
Philadelphia Inquirer and Daily News columnist Marcus Hayes. Philadelphia hosted the 7th annual Made in America Music Festival along the Ben Franklin Parkway over the weekend, bringing in tens of thousands of music fans. The festival provides a boost to the local economy both on and off the books, as WHYY's Darryl C. Murphy explains.
The way I do it is, ice cold water is $1.
Sadiq Garner works as a car salesman in Germantown. But every year outside of the Made in America Music Festival, he uses his salesmanship to hawk water. He's been tailoring his catchphrases over the years.
Ice cold water is $1. Who wants to get hydrated?
For Garner, the festival was a chance to make a little extra money. But standing less than a block away, 42-year-old Warren Kale was also selling water to provide for his wife and 2-year-old daughter.
Ice cold waters. I have ice cold water for $2.
The family has been homeless since last winter, and selling various items on the street has been his main gig. Kale says a place to live is the ultimate goal.
I feel like as a man, I can't sleep in the shelter with them. And I got so much to do out here. I'm strong. I have a strong back. So as long as y'all okay for right now, I'm going to see. I'll go ahead and make whatever couple of dollars I can make. And we see if we can get a room, an efficiency, or an apartment.
Kale has a criminal record, so he's apprehensive about applying for a traditional job. He says the jobs he's confident he could get don't pay enough to support a family. Kale and other vendors kept their distance from the festival entrance. Staff from the city's Department of Licenses and Inspections were patrolling near the gate for vendors who didn't have the proper license. Garner has no interest in getting one, but Kale is in the process. He already has his commercial activity license. For both, the event was an opportunity to flex their entrepreneurial skills.
It's out here. The money's out here. You just got to come out and get it.
During the day, things were slow, but when the event let out, business picked up as expected, leaving both exchanging ice-cold bottles for cold hard cash.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate that.
For WHYY, Daryl C. Murphy.
It may be that our Milky Way took a galactic-sized pause along the way to growing to its current size. Let's take up the two-step with Derek Pitts, chief astronomer at the Franklin Institute. Derek, first off, when did the Milky Way start to form?
Well, it's estimated, Dave, that the Milky Way actually began shortly after the beginning of the universe, some 13.5 billion years ago, give or take a year or two here and there. And at that time, the universe was young enough that there weren't many stars and star clusters around, but that the Milky Way was formed from the stars and star clusters that were there. There was also some gas from the galactic halo from which these stars are formed that helped to contribute to the formation of the galaxy itself. There were also a number of galactic mergers happening at the same time, much smaller galaxies that would coalesce with what we now know as the Milky Way galaxy to make it the big galaxy it is today.
So at what point did it take its more or less current shape?
Well, it seems as if the Milky Way ran along for a few billion years, making stars, generating plenty of energy, and then because of a change in the kind of gas that was being supplied from outside the galaxy, that star production stopped. And for about 2 billion years, the galaxy stopped producing stars.
Was it a virus or bacteria?
Well, it seems like it was something in between those two of the galactic sort, but these are mechanisms that we still don't quite understand yet. But if we simply look at the population of stars that we have in the galaxy now, we find that the chemical composition of those stars shows us that at some point, stars were being made with this kind of chemical composition, and then stars were being made with this kind of chemical composition, and that differentiation could only have arisen if there was a point at which the galaxy itself stopped producing stars and then began a new process of making stars.
So the current Milky Way is comprised of stars who were begat in either of these two eras.
Yes, so what we have is a situation where it looks like the galaxy was happily going along making stars, then stopped for a long period, then restarted again, and here we are today.
Does the size of a galaxy offer some hint at whether it's prone to this kind of hibernation?
Well, in fact, what is surmised by this and other studies of the two-stage process is that perhaps this is a process that applies to the larger galaxies, but not so the smaller ones. And we should also make sure we emphasize that it wasn't the Milky Way alone. I mean, if we look at the number of galaxies in the universe these days, that number is very, very high, like a trillion galaxies or more. So we shouldn't think of this as being exclusive to just this galaxy, but fortunately, we have the benefit of being able to study this particular one up close.
So size matters, but how about shape? Ours is a spiral, of course.
Well, we don't have any data on that yet, so we'll have to continue looking to understand at what point in the process of galaxy development this process might come into existence. So there's still lots of work to be done. And so any aspiring astronomers listening to us here, there's plenty of work waiting for you.
We have a moment left on this post-Labor Day holiday week with clear skies. What's available to be seen in the night sky?
Well, Dave, I know at the forefront of observing suggestions for our audience has been the four planets that are still available in the evening sky. That's Venus, Jupiter, Saturn, and Mars. They're still going to be around for another couple of weeks, at least the four. We're going to lose Venus pretty soon. But in the morning sky, we can find Mercury very low in the eastern sky at about 5:45 a.m. If you can do Mercury, then you can put that together with the evening observations of the four planets, and you will have seen all five of the brightest planets of our solar system without any difficulty.
Thanks, Derek.
My pleasure, Dave.
Derek Fitz, chief astronomer at the Franklin Institute. He joins us each week at this time on NewsWorks Tonight. Finally this evening, if you've spent the Labor Day holiday contemplating your job and a possible new career, Stockton University is keeping on top of new industries that promise to bring new jobs. On Wednesday, a handful of students at the New Jersey School will begin classes in the new Cannabis Studies program. As Governor Phil Murphy urges state legislators to pen a bill to legalize marijuana, Associate Professor of Biology Kathy Cedia tells WNYC, Stockton wants to be ready for future developments in the job market.
Oftentimes, you know, colleges do get criticized for not offering students, you know, enough real-life skills. And that is certainly going to be a real-life skill. It's an industry that is developing. And certainly, there are a lot of possibilities and new jobs.
The Cannabis Studies minor at Stockton University covers the legal, business, and medical aspects of the marijuana industry. Meanwhile, in Philadelphia, Thomas Jefferson University has begun offering certificates in cannabis medicine, chemistry, and pharmacology to compete with Stockton in this budding industry. That's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Benyakov, Kimberly Haas, and Brett Rader. Find us on your favorite podcast app or listen back at whyy.org/news. This week, the U.S. Senate Judiciary Committee prepares for confirmation hearings for Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh. New Jersey Senator Cory Booker, who sits on the committee, has recently levied harsh criticism of President Trump's choice. And tomorrow evening, we'll review Booker's comments and whether it might signal a 2020 presidential run. Thanks for listening and happy Labor Day. I'm Dave Heller. NewsWorks Tonight.